Please help me welcome our speaker tonight is Kathy from the Fishtown Group.
Hi, I'm Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. So I was going to move the microphone.
No,
I don't. I think everyone can hear me, right? I'll just get like right here. I'm kidding. I'll move it over. I was listening to this speaker recently, but not AA, a different speaker, and I thought she was kind of funny. Well, not funny. That's not the right word. But she was like, you know, and I do this too. Like, people get up here and you start wondering about like their stats, right? And so I'm just going to say, my sobriety date is April 25th, 2009. Yes, this is a leather shirt. I know it's unusual. And I got sober when I was 30. And yeah, that's it. So anyway, I kind of fell. Anyway, and this is my natural hair color. It's a little dark, but anyway, all kidding aside, but serious, because this is really about a fatal illness why we come here. And I take AA and recovery very serious. This is not a joke to me. Like, do we laugh? Do we have weird jokes? Do we laugh at one another? And, you know, can I only tell my friend Missy that, you know, I was doing drinking at work? I'm not going to tell my other coworkers who are not alcoholics that, because that'd be like really weird. Yes, can I only tell Missy and other people in my network that I manipulated the diamond earrings out of my mother's ears for more alcohol? Like, those are, you know, these are the things that I need to let out when I come here, because this stuff is pretty serious to me. And so anyway, with that, a little bit about myself. I'm one of seven kids. My parents had seven kids in 10 years. I wanted to die. Like, why? I don't know why anybody would want to have seven kids in 10 years. So I have five brothers. So I was really, really mad. I didn't understand, like, you know, my parents, you know, raised us. I was raised on welfare and I was poor. And that's just the reality of what I was brought into, you know. But, like, here's the thing, like, I had everything in my life. I got a roof over my head, I had food on the table, I had clothes on my back. But I was still always so unsatisfied. I didn't know how to quite be a sister. I didn't know how to, like, play nice, ever. You know, it was just, in my house, everybody was always, I fistfought every one of my siblings. I even have some scars to prove it. You know, I've had a broken nose, almost broken. Do you see how we like to exaggerate? And, you know, like, I literally had a butter knife thrown at me. My sister bit my arm once. My brothers made me fight her because she was cursing too much to my mom. And, you know, like, I come from a lot of chaos, you know. And here's the thing, like, it's not that my parents weren't really chaotic. It's just that no one really knew how to live. And nobody, it was just, I didn't know how to be a sister. I didn't know how to be a daughter. I didn't know how to be, you know, I just didn't know how to be. I was always, you know, just afraid. And I couldn't use that word afraid back then. I can use it now after going through this work and knowing that I was afraid then and full of fear. And so anyway, my parents, you know, did the best they could with what they had. And to explain my dad, I love him to death. He was just like a Bible in one hand and a joint in the other. And so that was the man of my life. And he would do cartwheels to, like, the Beatles. I'm like, he's fun too, you know. But he was never quite present. He was never, you know, I never ever once remember being daddy's little girl. Like, that never occurred. That never happened. And so my mom, when I was 7 years old, decided to pick up all seven kids and leave my dad. And my mom moved us into a house with her sister and her seven kids. Exactly. I could just go home now, right? You all understand. So there was 14 kids living in one house, one bathroom, three bedrooms, and two moms. my mom and her sister, because my aunt left her husband as a result of alcoholism. My mom left my dad. My dad's not an alcoholic. I don't know what he is. I just don't know. But I mean, I know now, but at the time I didn't understand. Like, he just wasn't capable of being the father that I thought he should have been. I just, you know, who knows? I don't try and figure it out. And so, like, I was 7 years old and pulled into a house with 14 kids. Like, I was like, you got to be kidding me, God. Really? Is this the life you gave me? I was so angry at God. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I don't know why you would do this to anybody. And I wouldn't, like, voice it. I would keep it bottled up inside. And if you were to look at me as a young girl, you would absolutely, like, see, like, I was fine. I never expressed emotion. I never expressed rage or anger. Like, I was just like going through the motions of life. And I thought that's what everybody else was doing. But yet, I would see, like, you know, when I was in school, I would see people raise their hand. I would see people do this. I'd see people do that. And I'd be like, how do they do that? Because I don't know how to. I was so afraid to raise my hand in school. Like, I was deathly afraid to be called on. I'm like, I would hide behind the person in front of me. And like that, so it's like I already from the gate was like uncomfortable in my own skin. But again, I could not explain that then. Nor can I go to my mom and say, Mom, I feel really weird at school. I can't raise my hand. Like, I'm not going to share that. It's going to look like I'm weak. I got 5 brothers because I was acting like I was always a Miss Tough Girl. Like, I was a tomboy. You know, like, I won Barbie doll and I painted her face black because I'm like, well, it's Halloween. I mean, like, I was like a tomboy. Like, I played sports. I was, I was just like a regular kid, like, just trying to play. But yet I would get home, and I hated being home. I hated being in my house. I hated everything about this house because it was, like, hanging on. It was, like, staying on, like, it was put together by rubber bands, basically. I mean, like, if you're in the bathroom and if you flush it, there's a good chance that the water might seep into the kitchen if you're cooking. So, like, you know, I was just always so angry and mad at that. And I was embarrassed by my life. But here's the thing. And, like, I don't know this then. Maybe, I mean, I had basic necessities met. You know, my mom really honed in on education, education, education. She kept us in school. She did what she had to do. She raised us on welfare. And when she left my dad, she didn't even have a high school diploma. And here she is with 7 kids raising us on her own with absolutely no emotional, financials, or any sort of support from my father. None at all. He was of the type, is once you leave, you're gone. And I'm not going to take care of the kids either. Well, he would take my 2 older brothers, though, because he didn't have to really, like, you know, watch them because they're of an age where they could watch themselves. So my mom, since, you know, she got her GED, she went to college, and she became a nurse. And she's one of my heroes today. But that wasn't until I expressed a lot of rage against her first, you know. So my first drink was in 6th grade. And I come from that Irish Catholic background. I was, went to all Catholic school, grade school, high school, some college. And it's just where I feel comfortable. It's what I know. It's how my mom wanted to raise me and the rest of my siblings. And, you know, it was just like the same, like, regular, like, I have 19 first cousins, and you know, we drink at Christmas, christenings, all that stuff. Like, we get together and they party. Do they still make bubbles? There was a lot of bubbles at the parties. I don't know if they even make those anymore. But anyway, my first drink was in 6th grade, and I drank Kahlua and milk. And then by the time I was in 7th grade, I had my first drunk. It was a 7-ounce bottle of Bud. At some party in some neighborhood I shouldn't have been. You know, I don't even know why I went to this party. I should have been afraid the neighborhood I was in. I wasn't. You know, instead I got drunk and passed out at some stranger's house. I'm in 7th grade. Like, that's abnormal. Okay, if I look at my nieces now, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I just can't even imagine, you know. Anyway, the night I graduated 8th grade, I smoked my first joint. By the time I was a freshman in high school, I was a weekend drinker. I would order cases of beer to my house because I was babysitting because I was the 3rd oldest of 7. Because by this time, my aunt and her 7 kids moved out. And so we were still left with this, you know, house that was like still half fallen down. And I was the babysitter on the weekends when my mom either was on a date or working and or Christmas shopping, and I would order cases of beer to my house, and I was 14 years old. And my brother was 11 at the time, and I had it all set up. I'm like, all right, John, when the beer gets here, you're going to go downstairs, you're going to, you know, answer the door, and if they ask for mom, you're going to holler up the steps and say, Mom, the beer's here. And I'm going to holler down the steps and say, the money's on the VCR, honey. That's how long ago it was. And so, and that's how I got my alcohol every weekend in high school. I would order four cases of beer. My one friend liked to drink warm Meisterbräu. I don't know why. It just had to be warm. So anyway, literally from the time I was a freshman in high school, I was a weekend drinker. And I would look at my mom and I would look at my aunts and I would look at them with disdain and be like, I don't want that life. You know, not in a loving way. Can you help me be better? I was judging them from the get-go internally, you know, and here's the thing, like, I want this better, whatever that better means. I don't even know what that means. You know, I have so much ego and so much pride and so much self-centered fear, I wouldn't even ask for help to how to, like, be successful or go on to college or can you help me do this? I sat in judgment and resentment my entire life. And by the time I this weekend drinking, like, it was fun. You know, I aspire to be drinking in the playground like all the other older guys and girls were doing. And then after that, when I was 19, I got into the bars. And that was my life. I went to school during the week. I got good grades. Nothing excelling, but not failing either, because I don't like to bring attention to myself. I know just the right concoction to make it all fit so they don't draw enough attention to myself. And that's what I did. Like, I drank on the weekends and I drank hard and I went to school. And here's the thing though. And this is like something I remember, like, so like as I, you know, stay on this path, like things start to come back to me. Like, I do remember at times not being able to sleep in high school, even in grade school. I remember being up 2, 3, 4 a.m. worrying, you know, and for no reason. It's just up. My head's just going. I don't know why. When am I going to sleep? You know? And I know now today, like, you know, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in my mind, you know, and alcohol shut that off. I wasn't up at 2, 3, 4 a.m. on the weekends because I was drunk. But when the week came, you know, my head was going. It was up. It was alive and well. The weekends it wasn't, because the alcohol is the solution to this mental problem. And so anyway, like I was saying, like, I aspire to be in here in an egoic way, you know, I'm going to get mine. I'm going to be successful at life. You know, I'm not going to raise my kids to be on welfare and blah, 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 blah. So it's like I had this drive at life, but it was all like a big one of these to my mom, to my dad, to my aunts, you know. And here's the thing. I didn't become successful. Because I don't like to do the work. I'm lazy as hell. I like quick, fast results. So I go to high school, I get out of high school, I get a full-time job. You know, and here's the thing. I can't manage my life. I can't manage my money. I don't know how to manage money. I'm not going to ask either. I just assume people just know how to live life without getting any sort of help or guidance from others. And I won't ask for it because I think it's weak. You know, And here's the thing. I don't know that I am cutting myself off from this power. I cut myself off from this power a long time ago. I'm going to get mine. Like, just, you know, just so selfish and self-centered. And I didn't know that I was also in the middle of this progressive fatal illness called alcoholism. I had no clue. And that when I'm sober, I'm so uncomfortable in my skin. And I don't know how to be in sober skin, and it just hurts. And I can't stop thinking about myself and thinking about myself and thinking about myself. I mean, if you think about it right now, how many right now is thinking about their self and their pity and their resentments and their judgments? I mean, it is crazy. We can't get out of this. This is as far as I go. I can't see your problem. I can't see nothing. In fact, I don't even want to either. Because I don't care. Like, that's just how selfish and self-absorbed I am. Do you ever look at people's pictures? I don't, if I'm not in them, because I don't really care. I mean, that's just, people are like, oh, I went through their Facebook pictures. I'm like, why? I don't even have, I'm too consumed thinking about myself. Am I in them? No, okay, I don't care. So, like, but seriously, I just think about myself and think about myself and think about myself. And here's the thing, it's usually not in a positive way either. It's always, for me, I love morbid reflection. Step 11 talks about it. I love morbid reflection. I will sit in self-pity and depression for days. To the point where I, like, my physical being doesn't even want to move. It's like my mind will literally, like, make me handicapped. I won't eat right. I won't exercise. I won't drink enough water. I can't go to work today. It's too painful. Oh my God. Don't go out of work for no reason today. Cause I'll just really want to like commit suicide because then here I was able to do that then when I was drinking. I can call out of work and it would, you know, I'd play the, you know, the mental whatever, like I'd be obsessing, like, I can't believe I called that to work. What am I going to do? I got to lie. But now if I do it, like, sober, I can't. I have to be legitimately sick or I have to have scheduled vacation. Like, I can't do last-minute call-outs because once I do, I know the next day, I'm like, oh, my God, do I go into work? Oh, my God, I can't. Do I make up another lie? Do I? It's like I can't. It's like once you get on this path, you know, it's – you can't stay on that left side too long. But anyway, and I always have a boyfriend. Always in a relationship. And I don't get out of one relationship until I know another one's lined up. And I don't get out of one relationship until I'm completely emotionally detached from this person. And now you can suffer alone. See you, bye. That's how I roll. And here's the thing. I don't even know that that's inconsiderate. I don't even know that. This is embarrassing, but it's the truth. I have never once considered another person's feelings until I got sober at 30 years old. Never once. Ever. I never thought, like, how my words hurt, how my actions hurt, how this other person may be hurting because of A, B, or C. It just never occurred. I was so disconnected from reality, like, I don't even, alcohol kept me grounded in reality, even though it was as delusional as it may have been, you know. So anyway, like, I always have a relationship, always, because I won't do this thing called life alone, you know, because I need to focus on you, because I'm so uncomfortable in my own skin, and don't you dare look at her or you're dead. You know, and here's the thing, and this is how I know, you know, this one guy I dated for 3.5 years and he was somewhat normal and he did one thing wrong and it really wasn't even that big of a deal. But I'll tell you what, he did one thing wrong to me and I held on to that resentment for the next 1.5 years and I drank over it. And then I acted like a woman that wasn't in a relationship and I'm like, well, he did this to me. Yeah, Kathy, 1.5 years ago, you're still hanging on it? Yeah. Yeah, I am. Because that's how I deal with emotions. That's how I deal with hurts. That's how I deal with resentments. I will not let you know that you hurt me. But I'll hurt you. But it's going to be some sort of like justification up here, but nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows that I'm trying to get some sort of relief from that resentment up here. But what they do see is my actions, and they're going, what is wrong with you? You're crazy. You know, and I have no idea that this is how I'm living life. I have no idea that I am that tornado in everybody's life around me. I have no idea how inconsiderate I am and selfish I am and self-absorbed I am. I can't stop thinking about myself without a higher power in my life. And that is true for today. So my weekends began to extend from Thursday to Sunday, Wednesday to Sunday, Tuesday to Sunday, dart night, pool night, shuffleball night, even though I don't play any of those games, but I'm there. You know what I mean? You got your bucket of beer, your $6 bucket, the 7-ounce bottles, the Miller Lite, my favorite, you know? And that was like how I rolled. And, you know, I always Then I met, so after I left that guy, the one that I was mad at, and I met a guy while I was with him, right? But this guy, he drank like me. So 3.5 years, I was like, I'm going out for dog food. Never returned. And it wasn't like it was an insignificant relationship, because it was my family barbecue to his house and vice versa. Like, and I went out for dog food and never returned. And I walked right into the arms of this other guy, and it was nothing but infatuation and more alcohol use. And at that point in time is when I drank on a daily basis in 2004, August of 2004. I'll never forget it. It was that part in the book that they talk about in Bill's story, that I had arrived moment. I had arrived. I got the guy, I got the alcohol, I got the money, I got the friends, and I can do whatever I want. I don't have this guy to be mad at me anymore. He, you know, this guy drinks like me. I have finally arrived at life. I had finally found that concoction to life that makes me feel safe in my skin and safe in this world. You know, but like, again, Bill Story talks about, it turns on me like a boomerang. And it did. So from August 2004 to 2007 I actually like to call that was the beginning of my end. For 3 years straight, I drank on a daily basis. I drank around the clock. I drank before work, at lunch, and after. I couldn't stop. I had a guy handing me money, drank like me, but eventually, I drank him away too. You know, all of a sudden, who needs car insurance? Who needs Comcast? Who needs all those things? Because now my delusional thinking is going, well, because all my money's going to alcohol, but yet my thinking's not going to tell me that. My thinking's going to go, you don't really need car insurance. Screw the government. They don't really, you know. That's how crazy, that's how much I am willing to justify how, like, much money I spend on alcohol. I don't really need to eat. I don't really need to buy mom a birthday gift this year. She's all right. I bought her a good present last year. What? But that's my thinking. Selfish and self-centered, and my, like, alcohol was running my life. And then here comes the job hopping, because I'm late, I don't show up, and when I do show up, I'm like, you're lucky I'm here. That's my attitude. It's like, you know, if I was my employer, Jesus, get out of here. But here's the thing, is my ego is so big that I know that if I get fired, like, I won't get fired. I'll give my 2 weeks notice. See you, bye. I won't allow myself to get fired. That's how much pride I have. But I'll make it look like it's because, you know, there's better opportunity over here. But that's, again, another lie I have to tell myself. It's not the truth. The truth is I was about to get fired because I drink too much. And this one job, I got evicted in 2007. My friends were no longer calling me. I was at this guy's house. I don't even know who he was. And I would just sit there and drink. My friends didn't know where I was. My family didn't know where I was. I would come home at 4 a.m. and, you know. And I get evicted in 2007. I show up to my mother's house. I'm 27, 28 years old at the time. And I show up at mom's house. And I'm like, I need a place to live. My money's gone. You know what I mean? Well, what happened to the girl who had this drive for success? She's going to get her. She's going to do this. She's going to do that. And now I'm 27, broke, about to lose a job. Car's about to get repoed in a week. Every creditor at my mom's door. No friends left. Like, what happened? You know, that wasn't the plan. I just don't do life well without a higher power in my life. I'm an alcoholic. And I just can't manage life on my own. And so I show up at mom's house because that's what I do. I bring my alcoholism into my mother's home. And I sleep on her floor for a year and a half. I have no more bed left. It's nothing. You know, my employer, I finally told them, I'm like, well, I have, you know, a problem. They're like, yeah, we know. Go to rehab and come back. I go to rehab and I show up with a comforter and scented candles, and I'm like an hour late for the appointment. And they're like, you need a $2,000 copay. First off, if I had $2,000, I'm not coming here. I mean, that's the reality, though. So I turned around and went back home. I did not go to rehab. I did not go to detox. I did not hit a recovery house. I solely got sober in these rooms, under these steps, under sponsorship, under a higher power, sleeping on the floor at my mother's house with no job and no car and no friends. I came in here broken. I came in here wearing the same jeans for 6 months. I came in here with roots down to here. You know, I mean, I was a mess when I came in here. And these rooms and these steps and the sponsor and this power greater than myself put me back together. And not only did I get that patched up life, but I got a new life. It's completely different. And I ate my mom's food and didn't pay her a dime. And that was, you know, I was up all night. And here's the thing, like, even when I was drinking just on the weekends, my mind went like this. I'm not going to the happy hour on Friday. I'm not going to the happy hour on Friday. And I'm talking to myself, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I'm not going to the happy hour on Friday. First of all, normal people don't need to have that conversation with themselves. And then when Friday comes, it's 4:45. I'm not going. 4:50, I'm not going. And all of a sudden, 5:01, 5:05 hits. Well, what's one? And I still don't understand why people just have one. Like, why? You know, and so here's the thing, is I go out for one drink and I don't come home till Saturday morning. And, like, that's why I would tell myself all week long, because it was painful, because I spent all my money. I did things that were, you know, unsavory for a young woman to be doing. Like, that wasn't, like, what I wanted to be. I was raised with morals and to love God and to be self-sacrificing and to be, you know, to be a volunteer. I'll do that later, Mom. She used to tell me all the time, you should volunteer. Sure, when I get my stuff together, then I'll volunteer, you know. And that would happen over and over and over again. And then when I was at my mother's house, when I, you know, drank every day for 3 years straight and cleaned out the 401k and all that stuff. I was broke and negative and, you know, every creditor after me and no more car. And I go to my mom's house and now I'm living this really pitiful existence. And I would sleep on her floor and I couldn't even listen to music. I couldn't watch TV. I couldn't watch TV until I had alcohol in my system. I couldn't pick my head up off the pillow until I had alcohol in my system. And then when the guy would answer the phone, and then I would hop in this car that had no insurance, it was my cousin's Jeep, and I've already have taken both fenders off, and I would fly down 95 until I can get a drink, and now I can do life. Oh, and now I can go into that rehab tomorrow. You know what I mean? Now I can make those phone calls. And then what begins to happen is the alcohol begins to wear off. And I have no money left, and it wears off, and it wears off, and I'm back down on that floor in misery and depression again. And this would happen over and over, day in and day out. And that is what my life became at 28 years old. I was jobless, friendless, sleeping on my mom's floor, scraping dollars to get by, manipulating the diamond earrings out of my mother's ears. And thank God, my mom is an angel. You know, I have two brothers who are sober. My mom's in Al-Anon. My stepfather's in GA. My oldest brother's sober. Like, you know, there was a 10-year period of darkness in my family's life. I mean, you know, cops are being called. There's holes in the walls. It's just a mess. And my first meeting was in 2007, but I didn't get sober until 2009. My sobriety date is April 5th, 2009, and it was that day that I surrendered, that I am an alcoholic. Like, I surrendered in my heart. I was surrendering from my head, and I didn't even know it. I surrendered from my heart, and I haven't stopped moving since, because it was explained to me that recovery is in my feet. It is not what I say. It is coming out here on a Monday night when I worked all day and I've worked tomorrow and I bring a newcomer. Like, that is recovery to me. That is me taking action. And that is how I was taught. This woman, Claire, who I met on my first day sober, I haven't left her side since. I follow her all around and I do what she does. And she shakes everybody's hands and welcomes everybody in the home group. And I was right behind her doing the same thing. And the next week when I come, she'll be like, get in my car, we're going. I never asked where we're going, why we're going, who's going to be there. You know, I didn't even give a shit because I had nothing in my life. I was willing to do whatever it took to get sober. I had nothing left. Like, I was done. And I just kept taking action after action after action. By 3 months sober, I was sponsoring other women. And every time I took them through the book, I got better. Because it's like the information comes back at me. It's like this big book is supposed to come to life. And it has. So as I'm taking these women through, I'm like, oh my God, that happened to me. Oh my God, that happened to me. Oh my God, that happened to me. And you're like, holy shit, like this is really happening. You know, if you don't have the enthusiasm to carry this message from what I heard someone share at a meeting, you may have missed something. And I said, I absolutely missed something. I don't want to help anybody. Well, if you don't want to help anybody, then sorry, it's all we got here. It's really all we have. If you're not willing to take the actions and then put, you know, help somebody else with those same actions, I can't live being miserable. I can't. I have a higher power that promises me peace and contentment. I have a higher power that promises me freedom from the bondage of self, like that third step talks about. If I'm lazy, so I'm like, God, do it, yo. Like, I don't care. Like, I don't like figuring stuff out because it's too much. So I just allow God to just figure it out. Just, I don't even know. Just, you know, I don't like to work hard. So, you know, I just let God handle my life, and I'll just show up, and I'll just do the footwork, you know, and I ended up having to do 3 inventories because you were never honest on the first one. If anyone even gets to the inventory, right? Everybody's working on the third step still. But even so, even that, like, I'm still not even honest on my first step because I don't even know that I'm being dishonest. My sponsors just say, when are you going to get honest? When are you going to get honest? I'm like, aren't I? Because I'm confused. She's like, yeah, no. You know, like, yeah, I don't even know when I'm lying. And it sucks having to tell somebody you're full shit, you know? But sometimes, like, we have to do that. I remember one time my sponsor called me up and she pissed me off. And she's like, when was the last time you shared at a meeting? I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, yeah, really? And she kind of nudged me because she knew my story. She knew, like, there are just parts where, like, sponsors just know. You know, and anyway, I'll just tell you what, like, I get sober, my brother John gets sober, me and John get to help Chris get sober, my mom starts Al-Anon, my mom and my stepfather raise my nephews because my sister's schizophrenic and can't live at home, and she's always off and up and down, up and down. My nephews' fathers, they haven't seen them since they were 2, they're now 9. You know, life has completely transformed as a result of these principles, as a result of not leaving these rooms, as a result of me always putting the next newcomer first, putting AA first, because it tells me when I put God first in these principles, the rest of my life will go in order. It is not my job to figure it out. It's just my job to show up and let the miracles happen after miracle, after miracle, after miracle. And that is what has happened over and over and over again. And it's so hard to explain that to people because it's an experience. Sometimes it can't be explained. And we have sober vacations. I just had the best Thanksgiving ever. And I see that every year because they keep getting better. You know, like we were at my mom's house and my one brother, if we're not alcoholic, we're married to the alcoholic. That's just how it goes. And my one brother's got 3 kids with this woman who's alcoholic, but unfortunately she came into the rooms and they leave and they get on the government Suboxone program and you're like, where'd you go? You know, my mom's still waiting for her amends. It's 5 years later. But anyway, because there is no pill for a spiritual experience. It's just not. It's the actions you take. A pill cannot fix my heart, my sick spirit. It just can't for me. My heart continues to get bigger and bigger as a result of staying in here. And then I can carry it out there. It is our job. We're the ones that get hit with these spiritual tools. We get blessed with this way of life, and it's our job to carry it outside. It's not our job to carry more burdens out there. Drop the burdens here. And that's how I was taught. And my dad lives with my brother, who's like his living. Like, it's just amazing. We're at Thanksgiving dinner. It's my dad. It's my mom. It's my stepdad. It's my brother's girlfriend's mom. It's my brother's wife's father. We're all sober. And it's like peace. And there's no arguing anymore. Thanksgiving dinners are not getting ruined anymore. But yes, was there a time it was dark and they were getting ruined? Absolutely. 3 years ago, actually, me and my oldest brother, because he is sober, but he didn't get to sober in these rooms, so he's still managing his own life, but it's not for me to decide what is right for him. But him and I always butt heads. So 3 years ago, he likes to bring up politics and religion. Anybody know what that's like at dinner table, Thanksgiving? I see him once a year, and he wants to talk about politics and religion. Ugh, anyway. So I'm like, Joe, maybe we should wait. You know, my brother Chris, who's also sober, I'm like, maybe we should do the what are you thankful for thing. And my brother Chris is like, no, let's just wait. I'm like, shit, because I can feel my oldest brother, Joe, just waiting to get it in, you know. And he did, and I got in an argument with him 3 years ago. And everybody left the table. And I remember having to call my friend. I'm like, oh my God, like I want to die. Like, we can't believe this just happened. And so, you know, me and my brother, we continue to butt heads and then we make up. We continue to butt heads and then we make up. And here we are 3 years later and he calls me at 10 a.m. And I'm always like, shit, do I answer this? Do I not answer it? So I answer it. The conversation's going really nice. He asked me to pick up his girlfriend to bring her to dinner so he can watch half of the Eagles game. And I'm like, sure, no problem. Like, you know, he's like, oh, I can't wait to tell everybody at dinner about this evil family member we have. And I'm like, oh, God. I'm like, can we not talk about negative stuff at the Thanksgiving Day table? And then he just blows up. And, you know, I'm like, and we're screaming. I had to hang up on him twice. I mean, this is just the other day, right? And I'm like, you gotta be, I'm like, I can't believe this is happening again, you know? And he's like, this is what happened 2 years ago. And I'm like, oh man, I had to call my other brother who is, you know, they say spirituality works backwards. And my two younger brothers, I'm telling you, they are men of God. I love them so much. I call them anytime and they always like kind of have the right words to say. And I call my brother John and he's like, you just got to pray. You got to, you know, just speak to him like a child. And my ego, and I'm like, no, but no, but no. He's not going to talk about this at dinner. And I'm trying to control him, so I get down on my knees. And I'm like, God, please. I don't want to ruin Thanksgiving dinner again. Can you please help me humble my heart? Because there was a part of me that's like, I'm not going to go. And that's not what these rooms taught me. They taught me to show up and be a woman of God and a woman of faith and to have patience and to have tolerance. And I got on my knees on Thursday and I was like, God, please humble my heart because I can't. I don't have the power to humble my heart. It's got to come from a power greater than myself. I don't have that capacity for love and patience. And I text my brother and I'm like, Joe, it really hurts my heart when we scream at each other. I'll call you at 11. I call him at 11. He doesn't answer. He calls me back a few minutes later. And it's like, God fixed it. I had my brother send him prayers. And my other friend send him prayers. And it was the most beautiful conversation I've ever had with my older brother, Joey. And here's the thing. He just wants his little sister to respect him. And the reality is I don't. Because there's a part of me that feels that he has nothing to offer me because I judge him. And it's like, really, guys, 6.5 years sober? Yep, this is where we're going. My heart got humbled. And that's why I'm saying it was a great Thanksgiving dinner. And at the end, my little nephew, Jake, who's 9, we did like 2 rounds of what are you thankful for? And it was like there was just love in the room. And I'm just like, wow, this really could have been ruined if I didn't pray or so-and-so. I don't know. Who knows? But that higher power saves my butt. And, because let's just say I didn't pray. Let's just say I allowed that to continue. Here we are Monday night. So-and-so would have been calling so-and-so. I can't believe this. I can't believe that. I got to call my sponsor. I can't believe, you know what I mean? I can't live that way. I can't live in resentment. I can't live in anger. It's too painful for me. We are here to show love and to bring love. And when my heart hurts, I have to go to the power that heals me. And he never fails me. These rooms never fail me. These principles never fail me. And you know, I was 4 years sober at the time, and I was on my second sponsor, and I had just gotten out of a relationship. In fact, I think I spoke here a few nights after that. I think this was in like 2012 or something, and I had just broken up with this guy. And like I said, I go out for dog food. That's how I break up. Like, I don't do well with. So I remember, like, I said to my sponsor, I said, can I break up with him over A, B, and C? And she was like, oh, yeah. But she wasn't going to tell me how to do it or when to do it. I had to again go to my power, my higher power, and say, God, I know you don't want me with this man. How do I end it? I know you don't want me in this back and forth stuff anymore. How do I end it? And I had to trust that he was going to provide the moment of when that was going to happen. And he did. And my heart hurt. And guess what? I didn't replace it with another relationship. It was time to grow. Even though I wanted to replace it with another relationship. I mean, who doesn't? You know, we're human. But I would have been, you know, avoiding more growth and more healing. And thank God for the women in my life, because they did it for me before. They've already been through this stuff. And I had to get close to my higher power. And every time, like, I let something go, God put something else in my... Now, because here's God's going, now I can work with you. Now I can work with you. And I have the person for you, but you won't let go of this other thing that's in your life. If you would just come to me, I'll help you. And so this woman, my sponsor at the time, she said, well, what was your amends like with your dad? I'm like, I don't owe my dad an amends. She's like, really? How much time sober are you? I'm like, 4 years. And she's like, oh, well, when was the last time you were a daughter? And I thought, oh, the answer was never. I never was a daughter. I never allowed myself to be a daughter. I never allowed him to be a dad. And here's the thing, like I said earlier, we are the ones that are hit with these set of principles. Maybe my dad's afraid to call me. Maybe he's afraid of my rejection. Maybe he's afraid of me cursing him out. Because he doesn't know his daughter who's sober. He doesn't know that one, because I neglected that part, because I decided to get a boyfriend and blah, 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 and keep, you know... 12 step talks about we practice these principles in all of our affairs, which means all relationships. My father is a relationship in my life, in this lifetime, whether I like it or not. And I had to make amends to him for not being a daughter for the past 4 years while I was sober. I didn't really owe him anything for previously, but just like not, I just never try to get a relationship with him. And it happened little by little by little. It started out by phone calls. It started out, and here's the thing, my sponsor, the one at the time, she'll call me up on a Tuesday or Wednesday and say, all right, it's time to take your dad to dinner. I'm all about the 11th step and practicing your faith, whatever it may be, but I'm also AA too, because a priest is not going to call me up on a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday and say, it's time to make dinner for your dad. The priest does not know that this is a life or death errand for me, but my sponsor knows, because she's been through it. And I have a relationship with my dad today. You know, I adore him now, and he knows how to talk. I open the door for him to let him know it's okay. It's okay for you to call me. It's okay to tell me you love me. I'm not going to bark at you anymore. It's over. The past is done. It is time for new relationships in my life. And just maybe that gave him some healing. Like, I don't know. Just maybe God created, you know, my mom and dad to have seven kids. You know, and here's the thing. My dad is getting a chance to whatever healing he needs by being a grandfather, by being a living grandfather with my brother and his kids. Maybe it's just not my business. Maybe he was just the father that God gave me and I was supposed to go down this path and cause destruction so that I can then come back and be a servant of God and put other people first. I mean, that's what happens in here. We get built up here so that we can go out there. There's a lot of sick people out there. It's not even with alcohol or drugs. Our bedevilments talk about it. Spiritually sick, the symptoms of a sick spirit, misery, depression, uselessness, unhappiness. How many people do we see at work that don't have an alcohol and drug problem and talk nothing but negative things because they don't know anything else? It is our job to show up with God in my life, to be that bright spot. And no, not talk about God. I mean, you can if you want to get, you know, hit with the... No. No. It is by actions. It's in the way I speak. It's in the way I carry myself. I don't want to go back. And I don't have to. We are promised freedom. We are promised that more will be revealed. I just got to stay in this path no matter how uncomfortable it gets, because I was taught in the past 2 years that I have to embrace uncomfortability. I hate being uncomfortable. Hate it. And I know I've learned. And here's the thing. I know I'm on a good wavelength here because my last two guys were pretty decent. Now that is saying a lot, and that is growth. You know, yes, one lasted 7 months and one lasted 7 weeks. But guess what? Someone said I wouldn't even call that a relationship. I'm like, well, that felt like more of a relationship than the seven-month one. What do I know? I'm just learning. And I've learned the process of, you know, if I got to lay on my bedroom floor and cry my eyes out, I do. Absolutely. God, my heart hurts. I go back to the power, back to the power. God, my heart hurts. As soon as I let that up, I'm telling you, the pain goes away. It might come back the next day, but it doesn't last long. I've learned not to run from the pain, but to embrace it. And the more I embrace it, the more, you know, whatever, growth I feel. I feel whole. That's the word. I was raised to be wholesome. But my aunts, my great aunts, they've been praying for years, generation after generation, you know. And every time I make an amends, every time I show up and be of service to somebody else, I get a little bit better. So I'm the first person that gets sober in my family, and it is carried to the next person, to the next person, to the next person. So much so that my mom actually now brings Christmas to recovery homes. And we call it the Marianne Project, which is my sister. She's schizophrenic, and we named it after her. And because we brought it to her recovery home first out in North Philly. And we get to carry that to our nieces and nephews because we engage them. We're like, all right, let's go shopping for these people. All right, now it's time to wrap the gifts. And everybody's got a piece in it. This year we're going to a shelter and serving lunch and dinner. We have six different dates because I thought, well, why don't we engage other extended members? And people are like, yeah, I want to do that. It's not just in here. It's out there too. People are starving. And here's the thing. They don't know that they're starving to serve somebody else. But maybe it's our job to provide those opportunities. It is service to others. Our big book talks about it. The bondage is self. I talked about it in the beginning. I can't stop thinking about myself. It's so sick. I mean, really, I don't even have the power to stop thinking about myself. We have prayers in our big book. We got a fear prayer, resentment prayer, three sex prayers. How about that? And, you know, financial amends. Still paying mine. Have I slacked? Yes. Do I pay the consequences? Yes. You know, I had good credit in my 20s. I finally just got a car a year ago. I was sober for 5 years and had no vehicle. But I got around to my commitments because I trusted in God. I would say, God, you have me going to New Jersey in a week. How am I getting there? I don't have to manage it. Because what happens is new people come through. God, if you're sending me there, like, please, you got to get me there. And sometimes it's hard to wrap your mind around when you haven't experienced it yet. I got to pray. God, you want me there? Provide the opportunity to get me there. Like, I don't know. You know, yeah, there are times where I had to rent that zip car or use my mom's car. My mom usually comes with me. Like, she loves this stuff. You know, those speaker CDs, I don't force them upon people. But when my mom was listening to those earlier on, when I first came into the program, she was like, holy shit, this is why my kids do what they do. My mom had to have a padlocked door on her bedroom door because she did not know which one of us were going to steal from her. We made her a prisoner in her own home. That's what alcoholics do. Can you imagine being a prisoner in your own home? Like, yeah, that's not happening to us. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I did the things to others that I did to people, or if it was done to me, rather, no. Like, I'm fighting. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not going to happen. You know, and my one friend always tells me, like, they don't want your money back. They want their money back. And if somebody stole from you, do you want them to wait 3 years? Probably not. Well, my ego goes, well, they ain't stealing from me. We're so nuts. I'm so nuts. But I don't know. Whew. Jack, thanks for asking me to be in service, because these car rides provided me, you know, to bring Missy. This is like her fifth AA meeting ever. Ever. I mean, that's really cool. I mean, welcome. Welcome home. And I only had the capacity to do that because it was done for me. Thanks, that's all I have. Thank you.